Chapter 26. The Dedicated. Forward and back. Aiden lay in the sandy hollow, clutching his dead son's weeping children, shielding their eyes against his ragged coat. Tears rolled down his face, too, but silently as he peered cautiously over the edge. At 5 and 6, my gran and Lewin deserved the right to cry. Aiden was surprised he had any tears left himself. Some of the wagons were burning. The dead lay where they had fallen. The horses had already been driven off, except for those still hitched to a few wagons that had been emptied onto the ground. For once he took no notice of the crated things the Aes Sedai had given into Aiel charge, toppled carelessly into the dirt. It was not the first time he had seen that, or dead Aiel, but this time he could not care. The men with the swords and spears and bows, the men who had done the killing, were loading those empty wagons with women. He watched Rhea, his daughter, shoved up into a wagon box with the others, crowded together like animals by laughing killers. The last of his children. Elwyn, dead of hunger at 10. Sorel at 20 of fever, her dreams told her was coming. And Jaren, who threw himself off a cliff a year ago at 19, when he found he could channel. Marind, this morning. He wanted to scream. He wanted to rush out there and stop them from taking his last child. Stop them somehow. And if he did rush out, they would kill him and take Rhea anyway. They might well kill the children, too. Some of those bodies sprawled in their own blood were small. Migran clutched at him as if she sensed he might leave her, and Lewin stiffened as if he wanted to hold tighter but thought himself too old. Aiden smoothed their hair and kept their faces pressed against his chest. He made himself watch, though, until the wagons wheeled away, surrounded by whooping riders, after the horses that were already almost out of sight toward the smoking mountains that lined the horizon. Only then did he stand up, prying the children loose. "Wait here for me," he told them. "Wait until I come back." Clinging to each other, they stared at him with tear-stained white faces, nodded uncertainly. He walked out to one of the bodies, rolled her over gently. Sirdra could have been asleep, her face just the way it appeared beside him when he woke each morning. It always surprised him to notice gray in her red-gold hair. She was his love, his life, and ever young and new to him. He tried not to look at the blood soaking the front of her dress or the gaping wound below her breasts.
"What do you mean to do now, Aiden? Tell us that! What?"
He brushed Sirdra's hair from her face, she liked to be neat, and stood, turning slowly to confront the knot of angry, frightened men. Sulwin was the leader, a tall man with deep-set eyes. He had let his hair grow, Sulwin had, as if to hide being Aiel. A number of men had. It made no difference to these last raiders, or those who had come before.
"I mean to bury our dead and go on, Sulwin."
His eyes drifted back to Sirdra.
"What else is there?" "Go on, Aiden. How can we go on? There are no horses. There is almost no water, no food. All we have left are wagons full of things the Aes Sedai will never come for. What are they, Aiden? What are they that we should give our lives to haul them across the world, afraid to touch them even? We cannot go on as before."
"We can," Aiden shouted. "We will. We have legs. We have backs. We will drag the wagons if need be. We will be faithful to our duty."
He was startled to see his own brandished fist. A fist. His hand trembled as he unclenched it and put it down by side. Sulwin stepped back, then held his ground with his companions.
"No, Aiden. We are supposed to find a place of safety. And some of us mean to do that. My great father used to tell me stories he heard as a boy, stories of when we lived in safety and people came to hear us sing. We mean to find a place where we can be safe and sing again."
"Sing?"
Aiden scoffed.
"I've heard those old stories too, that Aiel singing was a wondrous thing. But you know those old songs no more than I do. The songs are gone, and the old days are gone. We will not give up our duty to the Aes Sedai to chase after what is lost forever. Some of us will, Aiden.
The others behind Sulwin nodded.
We mean to find that safe place. And the songs, too. We will.
A crash whipped Aiden's head around. More of Sulwin's cronies were unloading one of the wagons, and a large flat crate had fallen, half breaking open to reveal what looked like a polished doorframe of dark red stone. Other wagons were being emptied, too, and by more than Sulwin's friends. At least a quarter of the people he saw were hard at work clearing wagons of everything but food or water.
Do not try to stop us, Sulwin cautioned.
Aiden made his fist loosen again.
You are not Aiel, he said. You betray everything. Whatever you are no longer Aiel. We keep the way of the leaf as well as you, Aiden. Go!
Aiden shouted.
Go! You are not Aiel. You are lost. Lost! I do not want to look at you. Go!
Sulwin and the others stumbled in their haste to get away from him. His heart sank lower as he surveyed the wagons and the dead lying among the litter. So many dead, so many wounded moaning as they were tended. Sulwin and his lost ones were taking some care in their unloading. The men with the swords had broken open crates until they realized there was no gold inside, no food. Food was more precious than gold. Aiden studied the stone doorframe, tumbled piles of stone figurines, odd shapes and crystal standing among the potted chora cuttings Sulwin's folk had no use for. Was there a use for any of it? Was this what they were being faithful for? If it was, then so be it. Some could be saved. There was no way to tell what Aes Sedai might consider most important, but some could be saved. He saw Migran and Luan clutching their mother's skirts. He was glad Saralyn was alive to look after them. His last son, her husband, the children's father, had died from the very first arrow that morning. Some could be saved. He would save the Aiel whatever it took. Kneeling, he gathered Syrdra in his arms.
We are still faithful, Aes Sedai, he whispered. How long must we be faithful?
Putting his head down on his wife's breast, he wept. Tears stung Rand's eyes. Silently he mouthed, Syrdra. The way of the leaf? That was no Aiel belief. He could not think clearly. He could hardly think at all. The lights spun faster and faster. Beside him, Muradin's mouth was open in a soundless howl. The Aiel's eyes bulged as if witnessing the death of everything. They stepped forward together. Jonai stood at the edge of the cliff, staring out westward over the sun-sparkled water. 100 leagues in that direction lay Comel. Had lain Comel. Comel had clung to the mountains overlooking the sea. 100 leagues west, where the sea now ran. If Alnora were still alive, perhaps it would have been easier to take. Without her dreams, he scarcely knew where to go or what to do. Without her, he hardly cared to live. He felt every gray hair as he turned to trudge back to the wagons, waiting a mile away. Fewer wagons now, and showing where. Fewer people, too. A handful of thousands where there had been tens. But too many for the remaining wagons. No one rode now, save children too small to walk. Aiden met him at the first wagon, a tall young man, his blue eyes too wary. Jonai always expected to see Willem if he looked around quickly enough. But Willem had been sent away, of course, years ago, when he began to channel no matter how hard he tried to stop. The world had too many men channeling still. They had to send away boys who showed the signs. They had to. But he wished he had his children back. When had his soul died? So little to be laid in a hastily dug hole, wasted with sickness there was no Aes Sedai to heal. There are Ogier, father, Aiden said excitedly. Jonai suspected that his son had always thought his stories of the Ogier were just that, stories.
They came from the north.
It was a bedraggled band Aiden led him to, no more than 50 in number, hollow-cheeked, sad-eyed, tufted ears drooping. He had become accustomed to his own people's drawn faces and worn, patched clothing, but seeing the same on Ogier shocked him. Yet he had people to care for and duties to discharge for the Aes Sedai. How long since he had seen an Aes Sedai? Just after Alnora died. Too late for Alnora. The woman had healed the sick who still lived, taken some of the sangreal, and gone on her way, laughing bitterly when he asked her where there was a place of safety. Her dress had been patched and worn at the hem. He was not sure she had been sane. She claimed one of the Forsaken was only partly trapped, or maybe not at all. Ishamael still touched the world, she said. She had to be as mad as the remaining male Aes Sedai. He pulled his mind back to the Ogier as they stood unsteady on their great legs. His thoughts wandered too much since Alnora's death. They had bread and bowls in their hands. He was shocked to feel a prick of anger that someone had shared their meager stock of food. How many of his people could eat on what 50 Ogier could consume? No. To share was the way. To give freely. 100 people? 200?
You have chora cuttings,
one of the Ogier said. His thick fingers gently brushed the trefoil leaves of the two potted plants tied to the side of a wagon.
Some, Aiden said curtly. They die, but the old folk keep new cuttings before they do.
He had no time for trees. He had a people to look after.
How bad is it in the north?
Bad,
an Ogier woman replied.
The blighted lands have grown southward, and there are Murdral and Trollocs.
I thought they were all dead. Not north, then. They could not turn north, south. The Sea of Jaren lay 10 days south, or did it any longer. He was tired, so tired.
You have come from the east?
Another Ogier asked. He wiped his bowl with a heel of bread and gulped it down.
How is it to the east?
Bad, Jonai replied. Perhaps not so bad for you, though. 12 days ago, some people took a third of our horses before we could escape. We had to abandon wagons. That pained him. Wagons left behind, and what was in them? The things the Aes Sedai had placed in Aiel charge, abandoned. That it was not the first time only made it worse. Almost everyone we meet takes things, whatever they want. Perhaps they will not be so with Ogier, though.
Perhaps,
an Ogier woman said, as if she did not believe it. Jonai was not certain he did either. There was no safe place.
Do you know where any of the Steading are?
Jonai stared at her. No. No, I do not. But surely you can find the Steading.
We have run so far, so long,
and Ogier, back in the huddle, said. And another added in a mournful rumble,
The land has changed so much. I think we must find a Steading soon or die,
the first Ogier woman said.
I feel a longing in my bones. We must find a Steading. We must.
I cannot help you, Jonai said sadly. He felt a tightness in his chest. The land changed beyond knowing, changing still so the plain traveled last year might be mountains this. The blighted lands growing, Murdral and Trollocs still alive, people stealing, people with faces like animals, people who did not recognize Dashane or know them. He could barely breathe. The Ogier lost, the Aiel lost. Everything lost. The tightness broke in pain, and he sank to his knees, doubled over, clutching his chest. A fist held his heart, squeezing. Aiden knelt beside him worriedly.
Father, what is it? What is the matter? What can I do?
Jonai managed to squeeze his son's frayed collar and pull his face close.
Take the people south.
He had to force the words out between spasms that seemed to be ripping his heart out.
Father, you are the one who—
Listen, listen! Take them south. Take the Aiel to safety. Keep the Covenant. Guard what the Aes Sedai gave us until they come for it. The way of the leaf. You must.
He had tried. Celinda Sedai must understand that. He had tried. Alnora. Alnora. The name faded, the pain in Rand's chest loosened. No sense. It made no sense. How could these people be Aiel? The columns flashed in blinding pulses. The air stirred, swirling. Beside him, Muradin's mouth stretched wide in an effort to scream. The Aiel clawed at his veil, clawed at his face, leaving deep, bloody scratches. Forward. Jonai hurried down the empty streets, trying not to look at shattered buildings and dead Chora trees. All dead. At least the last of the long-abandoned Jokars had been hauled away. Aftershocks still troubled the ground beneath his feet. He wore his work clothes, his Kadin Sor, of course, though the work he had been given was nothing he had been trained for. He was 63, in the prime of life, not yet old enough for gray hairs, but he felt a tired old man. No one questioned his entering the Hall of the Servants. There was no one at the great columned entrance to question anyone, or give greeting. Plenty of people darted about inside, arms filled with papers or boxes, eyes anxious, but none so much as looked at him. There was a feel of panic about them, and it grew by increments every time the ground shook. Distressed, he crossed the anteroom and trotted up the broad stairs. Mud stained the silvery white L-stone. No one could spare time. Perhaps no one cared. There was no need to knock at the door he sought. Not one of the great gilded doors to an ingathering hall, but a plain door, and unobtrusive. He slipped in quietly, though, and was glad he had. Half a dozen Aes Sedai stood around the long table arguing, apparently not noticing when the building trembled. They were all women. He shivered, wondering if men would ever stand in a meeting such as this again. When he saw what was on the table, the shiver became a shudder. A crystal sword, perhaps an object of the power, perhaps only an ornament, he had no way of telling, held down the dragon banner of Luz Theron Kinslayer, spread out like a tablecloth and spilling onto the floor. His heart clenched. What was that doing here? Why had it not been destroyed, and memory of the cursed man as well? What good is your foretelling, Ocel was almost shouting, if you cannot tell us when? Her long black hair swayed as she shook with anger. The world rests on this, the future, the wheel itself. Dark-eyed Deendra faced her with a more usual calm. I am not the creator. I can only tell you what I foretell. Peace, sisters. Celinda was the calmest of them all, her old-fashioned strife gown only a pale blue mist. The sun-red hair falling to her waist was nearly the color of his own. His great father had served her as a young man, but she looked younger than he. She was Aes Sedai.
The time for contention among ourselves is past. Jarek and Hindar will both be here by tomorrow.
Which means we cannot afford mistakes, Celinda. We must know. Is there any chance of?
Jonai stopped listening. They would see him when they were ready. He was not the only one in the room besides the Aes Sedai. Somesta sat against the wall near the door, a great shape seemingly woven of vines and leaves, his head a little above Jonai's even so. A fissure of withered brown and charred black ran up the Nim's face and furrowed the green mass of his hair, and when he looked at Jonai, his hazelnut eyes seemed troubled. When Jonai nodded to him, he fingered the rift and frowned.
Do I know you?
He said softly. I'm your friend, Jonai replied sadly. He had not seen Somesta in years, but he had heard of this. Most of the Nim were dead, he had heard. You rode me on your shoulders when I was a child. Do you remember nothing of it?
Singing, Somesta said. Was there singing? So much is gone. The Aes Sedai say some will return. You are a child of the dragon, are you not?
Jonai winced. That name had caused trouble, no less for not being true. But how many citizens now believe the Daishain Aiel had once served the dragon and no other Aes Sedai?
Jonai.
He turned at the sound of Celinda's voice, went to one knee as she approached. The others were still arguing, but more quietly.
All is in readiness, Jonai, she asked.
All Aes Sedai. Celinda Sedai.
He hesitated, took a deep breath.
Celinda Sedai, some of us wish to remain. We can serve still.
Do you know what happened to the Aiel at Zora?
He nodded, and she sighed, reaching out to smooth his short hair, as if he were a child.
Of course you do. You, Daishain, have more courage than... 10,000 Aiel linking arms and singing, trying to remind a madman of who they were and who he had been, trying to turn him with their bodies and a song. Jarek Mondoran killed them. He stood there, staring as though at a puzzle, killing them, and they kept closing their lines and singing. I am told he listened to the last Aiel for almost an hour before destroying him. And then Zora burned, one huge flame consuming stone and metal and flesh. There is a sheet of glass where the second greatest city in the world once stood. Many people had time to flee, Aes Sedai. The Daishain earned them time to flee. We are not afraid.
Her hand tightened painfully in his hair.
The citizens have already fled Parandiz and Jonai. Besides, the Daishain yet have a part yet to play, if Deendra could only see far enough to say what. In any case, I mean to save something here, and that something is you.
As you say, he said reluctantly. We will care for what you have given into our charge until you want them again.
Of course, the things we gave you.
She smiled at him and loosened her grip, smoothing his hair once more before folding her hands.
You will carry the things to safety, Jonai. Keep moving, always moving, until you find a place of safety where no one can harm you.
As you say, Aes Sedai.
What of Cumin, Jonai? Has he calmed?
He did not know any way but to tell her. He would rather have bitten his tongue out.
My father is hiding somewhere in the city. He tried to talk us into resisting. He would not listen, Aes Sedai. He would not listen. He found an old shock lance somewhere, and
he could not go on. He expected her to be angry, but her eyes glistened with tears.
Keep the covenant, Jonai. If the Daishain lose everything else, see they keep the way of the leaf. Promise me.
Of course, Aes Sedai, he said, shocked.
The covenant was the Aiel, and the Aiel were the covenant. To abandon the way was to abandon what they were. Cumin was an aberration. He had been strange since he was a boy, it was said. Hardly Aiel at all, though no one knew why.
Go now, Jonai. I want you far from Paradisan by tomorrow. And remember, keep moving. Keep the Aiel safe.
He bowed where he knelt, but she was already being drawn back into the argument.
Can we trust Kodam and his fellows, Celinda?
We must, Ursel. They are young and inexperienced, but barely touched by the taint, and we have no choice.
Then we will do what we must. The sword must wait. So, Meshta, we have a task for the last of the Nim, if you will do it. We have asked too much of you. Now we must ask more.
Jonai bowed his way out formally as the Nim rose, his head brushing the ceiling. Already immersed in their plans, they were not looking at him. But he did them their last honor anyway. He did not think he would ever see them again. He ran from the Hall of the Servants all the way out of the city to where the great gathering waited. Thousands of wagons in 10 lines, stretching nearly 2 leagues, wagons loaded with food and water barrels, wagons loaded with the crated things the Aes Sedai had given into Aiel charge, Angrial and Saangrial and Tirangrial, all the things that had to be kept from the hands of men going mad while they wielded the One Power. Once there would have been other ways to carry them, jokars and jumpers, hoverflies, and huge show wings. Now, painfully assembled horses and wagons had to suffice. Among the wagons stood the people, enough to populate a city, but perhaps all the Aiel left alive in the world. 100 came to meet him, men and women, the representatives demanding word of whether the Aes Sedai had granted leave for some to stay.
No,
he told them. Some frowned reluctantly, and he added,
We must obey. We are Dashain Aiel, and we obey the Aes Sedai.
They dispersed back to their wagons slowly, and he thought he heard Cumann's name mentioned, but he could not let it trouble him. He hurried to his own wagon at the head of one of the center lines. The horses were all nervous with the ground shaking at intervals. His sons were already up on the seat, Willem, 15, with the reins, and Aiden, 10, beside him, both grinning with nervous excitement. Little Isolde lay playing with a doll on top of the canvas tied over their possessions, and, more important, their charges from the Aes Sedai. There was no room for any to ride but the young and the very old. A dozen rooted chora cuttings in clay pots sat behind the wagon seat, to be planted when they found a place of safety. A foolish thing to carry, perhaps, but no wagon was without its potted cuttings. Something from a time long gone, symbol of a better time to come. People needed hope and symbols. Alnora waited beside the team, glossy black hair tumbling about her shoulders and reminding him of the first time he saw her as a girl. But worry had etched lines around her eyes now. He managed to smile for her, hiding the worry in his own heart.
All will be well, wife of my heart.
She did not answer, and he added,
Have you dreamed?
Of no time soon,
she murmured.
All will be well. All will be well, and all manner of things will be well.
Smiling tremulously, she touched his cheek.
With you I know it will be so, husband of my heart.
Jonai waved his arms over his head, and the signal rippled down the lines. Slowly the wagons began to move, the Aiel leaving Parandisan. Rand shook his head. Too much. Memories crowding together. The air seemed filled with sheet lightning. The wind swirled gritty dust into dancing whirlwinds. Mirrodin had clawed deep furrows in his face. He was digging at his eyes now. Forward. Cumann knelt at the edge of the plowed ground in his working clothes, plain brownish-gray coat and breeches and soft-laced boots, in a line with others like him that surrounded the field. 10 men of the Dashain Aiel at twice stretched arm's length, and then an ogier all the way around. He could see the next field, lined the same way, beyond the soldiers with their shock lances sitting atop armored jokars. A hoverfly buzzed overhead in its patrol, a deadly black metal wasp containing 2 men. He was 16, and the women had decided his voice was finally deep enough to join in the seed singing. The soldiers fascinated him, men and ogier, the way a colorful, poisonous snake might. They killed. His father's great-father, Charn, claimed there had been no soldiers once, but Cumann did not believe it. If there were no soldiers, who would stop the Night Riders and the Trollocs from coming to kill everyone? Of course, Charn claimed there had not been any Murdrol or Trollocs then either. No Forsaken, no Shadow Wrought. How many stories he claimed were from a time before soldiers and Night Riders and Trollocs, when he said the Dark Lord of the Grave had been bound away, and no one knew his name or the word war. Cumann could not imagine such a world. The war had been old when he was born. He enjoyed Charn's stories, even if he could not make himself believe, but some earned the old man frowns and scoldings, like when he claimed to have served one of the Forsaken once. Not just any Forsaken, but Lanfear herself. As well say he had served Ishamael. If Charn had to make up stories, Cumann wished he could say he had served Luz Theron, the great leader himself. Of course, everyone would ask why he was not serving the dragon now, but that would be better than the way things were. Cumann did not like the way citizens looked at Charn when he said that Lanfear had not always been evil. A stir at the end of the field told him one of the Nim was approaching. The great form, head and shoulders and chest taller than any Ogier, stepped out into the seeded ground, and Kuma did not have to see to know he left footprints filled with sprouting things. It was Someshta, surrounded by clouds of butterflies, white and yellow and blue. Excited murmurs rose from the townspeople, and the folk whose fields these were gathered to watch. Each field would have its Nim now. Kuman wondered if he could ask Someshta about Charn's stories. He had spoken to him once, and Someshta was old enough to know if Charn was telling the truth. The Nim were older than anyone. Some said the Nim never died, not so long as plants grew. But this was no time to be thinking of questioning a Nim. The Ogier began it, as was fitting, standing to sing, great bass rumbles like the earth singing. The Aiel rose, men's voices lifting in their own song, even the deepest at a higher pitch than the Ogier's. Yet the songs braided together, and Someshta took those threads and wove them into his dance, gliding across the field in swooping strides, arms wide, butterflies swirling about him, landing on his spread fingertips. Kuman could hear the seed singing around the other fields, hear the women clapping to urge the men on, their rhythm, the heartbeat of new life. But it was a distant knowledge. The song caught him up, and he almost felt that it was himself, not the sounds he made, that Someshta wove into the soil and around the seeds. Seeds no longer, though. Zemei's plants covered the field, taller wherever the Nim's foot had trod. No blight would ever touch those plants, nor any insect. Seed sung, they would eventually grow twice as high as a man and fill the town's grain barns. This is what he had been born for, this song and the other seed songs. He did not regret the fact that the Aes Sedai had passed him over at 10, saying he lacked the spark. To have been trained as Aes Sedai would have been wondrous, but surely no more so than this moment. The song faded slowly, the Aiel guiding its end. Someshta danced a few steps more after the last voices ceased, and it seemed the song still hung faintly in the air for as long as he moved. Then he stopped, and it was done. Kuman was surprised to see that the townspeople were gone, but he had no time to wonder where they had gone or why. The women were coming, laughing, to congratulate the men. He was one of the men now, not a boy any longer, though the women alternated between kissing him on the lips and reaching up to ruffle his short red hair. It was then that he saw the soldier, only a few steps away, watching them. He had left his shock lance and fan-cloth battle cape somewhere, but he still wore his helmet, like some monstrous insect's head, its mandibles hiding his face, though his black visor was raised. As if realizing he stood out, the soldier pulled off the helmet, revealing a dark young man, no more than 4 or 5 years older than Kuman. The soldier's unblinking brown eyes met his, and Kuman shivered. The face was only 4 or 5 years older, but those eyes. The soldier would have been chosen to begin his training at 10, too. Kuman was glad Aiel were spared that choosing. One of the Ogier, Tomara, came over, tufted ears slanted forward inquisitively.
"Do you have news, warman? I saw excitement among the Jokars while we sang."
The soldier hesitated. "I suppose I can tell you, though it is not confirmed. We have a report that Luce Theron led the companions on a strike at Sheol Ghul this morning at dawn. Something is disrupting communications, but the report is the Boar has been sealed, with most of the Forsaken on the other side. Maybe all of them."
"Then it is over,"
Tomata breathed.
"Over at last. The light be praised."
"Yes." The soldier looked around, suddenly seeming lost. "I suppose it is. I suppose." He peered at his hands, then let them fall to his sides again. He sounded weary. The local folk could not wait to begin celebrating. If the news is true, it might go on for days. I wonder if... No, they will not want soldiers joining in. Will you?"
"For tonight, perhaps,"
Tomata said.
But we have 3 more towns to visit before our circuit is done.
Of course. You still have work to do. You have that. The soldier looked around again. There are still Trollocs. Even if the Forsaken are gone, there are still Trollocs. And Night Riders. Nodding to himself, he started back toward the Jokars. Tamata did not appear excited at all, of course, but Kuman felt as stunned as the young soldier. The war was over? What would the world be like without war? Suddenly he had to talk to Jarn. Sounds of merrymaking rolled out to meet him before he reached the town, laughing, singing. The bells in the town hall tower began ringing exuberantly. Townspeople danced in the streets, men and women and children. Kuman dodged between them, searching. Jarn had elected to stay at one of the inns where the Aiel were putting up instead of coming to the singing. Even the Aes Sedai could no longer do much for the ache in his aged knees. But surely he would be out for this. Abruptly, something struck Kuman in the mouth and his legs buckled. He was pushing himself to his knees before he realized he was down. A hand put to his mouth came away bloody. He looked up to find an angry-faced townsman standing over him, nursing a fist. "Why did you do that?" he asked. The townsman spat at him. "The Forsaken are dead. Dead, do you hear? Landfear will not protect you anymore. We will root out all of you who serve the Forsaken while pretending to be on our side, and treat the lot of you as we treated that crazy old man." A woman was tugging at the man's arm. "Come away, Toma. Come away and hold your foolish tongue. Do you want the Ogier to come for you?" Suddenly wary, the man let her pull him away into the crowd. Struggling to his feet, Kuman began to run, heedless of the blood oozing down his chin. The inn was empty, silent. Not even the innkeeper was there, or the cook, or her helpers. Kuman ran through the building, shouting, "Jarn! Jarn! Jarn!" Out back, maybe. Jarn liked to sit under the spice apple trees behind the inn and tell his stories of the days when he was young. Kuman ran out the back door and tripped, falling on his face. It was an empty boot that had caught his toe. One of Charn's red dress boots that he wore all the time, now that he no longer joined in the singing. Something made Kuman look up. Charn's white-haired body hung from a rope pulled over the ridgepole. 1 foot bare, where he had kicked his boot off, the fingers of one hand caught at his neck, where he had tried to pull the rope free.
"Why?" Kuman said. "We are Dashain. Why?"
There was no one to answer. Clutching the boot to his chest, he knelt there, staring up at Jarn, as the noise of the revelry washed over him. Rand quivered. The light from the columns was a shimmering blue haze that seemed solid, that seemed to claw the nerves out of his skin. The wind howled, one vast whirlwind sucking inward. Muirden had managed to veil himself, bloody sockets stared blindly above the black veil. The Aiel was chewing, and bloody froth dripped onto his chest. Forward. Jarn made his way down the side of the wide, crowded street beneath the spreading chora trees, their trefoil leaves spreading peace and contentment in the shadows of silvery buildings that touched the sky. A city without choras would seem bleak as wilderness. Jokars hummed quietly down the street, and a great white show wing darted across the sky, carrying citizens to Comel, or Tzora, or somewhere. He seldom used the show wings himself. If he needed to go very far, an Aes Sedai usually traveled with him. But tonight he would, to Majin. Today was his 25th naming day, and tonight he intended to accept Nala's latest offer of marriage. He wondered if she would be surprised. He had been putting her off for a year, not wanting to settle down. It would mean changing his service to Zorel Sedai, whom Nala served, but Mirin Sedai had already given her blessing. He rounded a corner and just had time to see a dark, wide-shouldered man with a fashionably narrow beard before the man's shoulder sent him crashing to his back, head bouncing on the walkway, so he saw spots. Dazed, he lay there.
"Watch where you are going,"
the bearded man said irritably, adjusting his sleeveless red coat and flicking the lace at his wrists. His black hair, hanging to his shoulders, was gathered in back. That was the latest fashion, too, as near as anyone who had not sworn to the Covenant would come to imitating Aiel. The pale-haired woman with him laid a hand on his arm, her dress of shimmery white streath becoming more opaque with her sudden embarrassment.
Jom, look at his hair. He is Aiel, Jom.
Feeling his head to see if it was cracked, Charn's fingers brushed through short-cut, reddish-gold hair. He gave the longer tail at his nape a tug in lieu of shaking his head. A bruise, he thought, but no more.
So he is. The man's annoyance vanished in consternation. Forgive me, Dashain. I am the one who should be watching where he walks. Let me help you up.
He was already suiting his words, hoisting Charn to his feet.
Are you all right? Let me call a jumper to take you where you are going.
I am not hurt, citizen, Charn said mildly. Truly, it was my fault.
It had been, hurrying like that. He could have injured the man.
Did I harm you? Please forgive me.
The man opened his mouth to protest. Citizens always did. They seemed to think Aiel were made of spin glass. But before he could speak, the ground rippled under their feet. The air rippled, too, in spreading waves. The man looked about uncertainly, pulling his stylish fan-cloth cloak around himself and his lady so their heads seemed to float disembodied.
What is it, Dashain?
The others who had seen Charn's hair were gathering around him anxiously, asking the same questions, but he ignored them, not even thinking of whether he was being rude. He actually began to push through the crowd, his eyes fixed on the Sharam. The white sphere, 1,000 feet in diameter, floated as high above the blue and silver domes of the Column Dan. Mirren had said today was the day. She said she had found a new source for the One Power. Female Aes Sedai and male would be able to tap the same source, not separate halves. What men and women could do united would be even greater now that there would be no differences. And today she and Baidoman would tap it for the first time. The last time, men and women would work together wielding a different power. Today. What seemed a tiny chip of white spun away from the Sharam in a jet of black fire. It descended, deceptively slow, insignificant. Then 100 gouts spurted everywhere around the huge white sphere. The Sharam broke apart like an egg and began to drift down, falling, an obsidian inferno. Darkness spread across the sky, swallowing the sun in unnatural night, as if the light of those flames was blackness. People were screaming, screaming everywhere. With the first spurt of fire, Charn broke into a run toward the Column Dan. But he knew he was too late. He was sworn to serve Aes Sedai, and he was too late. Tears rolled down his face as he ran. Blinking to dispel the spots fluttering across his vision, Rand squeezed his head with both hands. The image still drifted through his head, that huge sphere, burning black, falling. Did I really see the hole being drilled into the Dark One's prison? Did I? He stood at the edge of the glass columns, staring out at Avendasora. A Chora tree. A city is a wilderness without Choras. And now there's only one. The columns sparkled in the blue glow from the dome of fog above, but once again the light seemed only brilliant reflections. There was no sign of Muradin. He did not think the Aiel had come out of the glass forest, or ever would. Suddenly something caught his eye, low in the branches of the Tree of Life. A shape swinging slowly. A man hanging from a pole laid across 2 branches by a rope around his neck. With a wordless roar, he ran for the tree, grabbing at Saidin, the fiery sword coming into his hands as he leaped, slashing at the rope. He and Matt hit the dusty white paving stones with 2 thuds. The pole jarred free and clattered down beside them. Not a pole, but an odd black-hafted spear with a short sword blade in place of a spear point, slightly curved and single-edged. Rand would not have cared if it was made of gold and quendiar set with sapphires and fire drops. Letting sword and power go, he ripped the rope away from Matt's neck and pressed an ear to his friend's chest. Nothing.
Desperately, he tore open Matt's coat and shirt, breaking the leather cord that held a silver medallion on Matt's chest. He tossed the medallion aside, listened again. Nothing. No heartbeat. Dead.
No! He'd be all right if I hadn't let him follow me here. I can't let him be dead.
As hard as he could, he pounded his fist against Matt's chest, listened. Nothing. Again he hammered, listened.
Yes. There.
A faint heartbeat. It was. So faint, so slow, and slowing. But Matt was still alive despite the heavy purple welt around his neck. He might yet be kept alive. Filling his lungs, Rand scrambled around to breathe into Matt's mouth as strongly as he could. Again. Again. Then he leaped astride Matt, seized the waist of his breeches, and heaved upward, lifting his hips off the pavement. Up and down, three times, and then back to breathing into his mouth. He could have channeled. He might have been able to do something that way. The memory of that girl on the stone stopped him. He wanted Matt to live. Live, not be a puppet moved by the power. Once back in Emmons Field, he had seen Master Lujan revive a boy who had been found floating in the wine spring water. So he breathed and heaved, and prayed. Abruptly, Matt jerked, coughed. Rand knelt beside him as he put both hands to his throat and rolled onto his side, sucking air in an agonized rattle. Matt touched the piece of rope with one hand and shivered.
Those flaming sons of goats, he muttered hoarsely.
They tried to kill me.
Who did?
Rand asked, looking around warily. Half-finished palaces around the great littered square stared back at him. Surely Radion was empty except for the two of them, unless Muradin was still alive somewhere.
The folk, on the other side of that twisted doorway.
Swallowing painfully, Matt sat up and took a deep, unsteady breath.
There's one here too, Rand.
He still sounded as if his throat had been rasped.
You could go through it? Did they answer questions?
That could be useful. He desperately needed more answers. 1,000 questions and too few answers.
No answers, Matt said huskily. They cheat, and they tried to kill me.
He picked up the medallion, a silver fox head that almost filled his palm, and after a moment stuffed it into his pocket with a grimace.
I got something out of them at least.
Pulling the strange spear to him, he ran his fingers along the black shaft. A line of some strange cursive script ran its length, bracketed by a pair of birds inlaid in metal even darker than the wood. Ravens, Rand thought they were. Another pair were engraved on the blade. With a rough, wry laugh, Matt levered himself to his feet, half leaning on the spear, the sword blade beginning just level with his head. He did not bother to lace up his shirt or button his coat.
I'll keep this, too. They're a joke, but I will keep it.
A joke? Matt nodded.
What it says. Thus is our treaty written. Thus is agreement made. Thought is the arrow of time. Memory never fades. What was asked is given. The price is paid.
A pretty joke, you see.
I'll slice them with their own wit if I ever get the chance. I'll give them thought and memory.
He winced, scrubbing a hand through his hair.
Light, but my head hurts. It's spinning, like 1,000 bits of dreams, and every one a needle.
Do you think Moraine will do something for it if I ask?
I am sure she will, Rand replied slowly.
Matt had to be hurting badly if he sought the Aes Sedai's help. He looked at the dark spear shaft again. Most of the script was hidden by Matt's hand, but not all. Whatever it was, he had no idea what it said. How had Matt? Rudion's empty windows stared at him mockingly. We hide many secrets still, they seemed to say. More than you know, worse than you know.
Let's go back now, Matt. I don't care if we have to cross the valley in the night. As you said, it will be cooler. I don't want to stay in here any longer. That sounds just fine to me,
Matt said, coughing. as long as we can get another drink of water at that fountain.
Rand kept his pace to Matt's, which was slow at first, hobbling along using the odd spear as a walking staff. He paused once to look at the two figurines of a man and a woman holding crystal spheres, but he left them there. Not yet. Not for a long time yet, if he was lucky. When they left the square behind, the unfinished palaces rearing along the street had a threatening look, their jagged tops like the walls of great fortresses. Rand embraced Sidene, though he saw no real threat. But he felt it, as though murderous eyes were boring into his back. Rudion lay peaceful and empty, shadowless in the blue glow of its fog roof. The dust in the streets rippled in the wind. The wind. There was no wind.
No, burn me, Matt muttered. I think we're in trouble, Rand. It's what I get for staying around you. You always get me in trouble.
The ripples came faster, sliding together to make thicker lines, quivering still.
Can you walk faster? Rand asked.
Walk. Blood and ashes, I can run.
Slanting the spear across his chest, Matt suited his words with a lurching gallop. Running alongside, Rand brought his sword back, uncertain of what he could do with it against shivering lines of dust, uncertain that there really was need. It was only dust.
No, it bloody isn't. It's one of those bubbles. The Dark One's evil drifting along the pattern, seeking out bloody Taviren. I know it is.
All around them, dust rippled and shivered ever thicker, bunching and gathering. Suddenly, right in front of them, a shape reared up in the basin of a dry fountain, a solid man shape, dark and featureless, with fingers like sharp claws. Silently, it leaped at them. Rand moved instinctively. The moon rises over water, and the blade of power sliced through that dark figure. In a twinkling, it was only a thick cloud of dust drifting toward the pavement. Others replaced it, though. Black faceless shapes rushing in from all sides, no two alike, but all with reaching claws. Rand danced the forms among them, blade weaving intricate patterns in the air, leaving floating motes behind. Matt used his spear like a quarterstaff, a spinning blur, but bringing the sword blade into it as if he had always used the weapon. The creatures died, or at least returned to dust, but they were many and quick. Blood poured from Rand's face, and the old wound in his side burned on the point of splitting open. Red spread across Matt's face, too, and down his chest. Too many and too quick.
You do not do the tenth part of what you are capable of already.
That was what Lanfear had told him. He laughed as he danced the forms.
Learn from one of the Forsaken.
He could do that, if not the way she intended. Yes, he could. He channeled, wove strands of the power, and sent a whirlwind in the middle of each black shape. They exploded in clouds of dust that left him coughing. As far as he could see, dust settled from the air. Hacking and panting, Matt leaned on his dark-shafted spear.
Did you do that? He wheezed, wiping blood away from his eyes. About time. If you knew how, why didn't you bloody do it in the first place?
Rand started to laugh again.
Because I didn't think of it. Because I didn't know how until I did it.
But it froze in his mouth. Dust drifted out of the air, and as it settled on the ground, it began to ripple.
Run, he said. We have to get out of here. Run!
Side by side, they sped for the fog, slashing at any lines of dust that seemed to be thickening, kicking at them, anything to keep them from coalescing. Rand sent whirlwinds swirling wildly in every direction. Dispelled dust began shivering back together immediately, even before it reached the ground now. They kept running into the fog and through, bursting out into dim, sharp-shadowed light. Side aching, Rand spun, ready to try lightning or fire, anything. Nothing came through the fog after them. Maybe the mist was a wall to those dark shapes. Maybe it held them in. Maybe. He did not know. He did not really care so long as the things could not follow.
Burn me, Matt muttered hoarsely.
We were in there all night. It's nearly sunrise. I didn't think it was that long.
Rand stared at the sky. The sun had not topped the mountains yet. A painfully brilliant nimbus outlined the jagged peaks. Long shadows covered the valley floor.
He will come from Rudian at dawn and tie you together with bonds you cannot break. He will take you back, and he will destroy you.
Let's go back up the mountain, he said quietly. They will be waiting for us.
For me.